My name is Neil Anderson, and welcome to the slightly changed format of the Ungagged podcast. Previously, we've had one big podcast, but we've decided to change it slightly and split it into three different parts. So, for February's issue, we have tonight's, going out on Monday, one out on Wednesday, and the last one out on Saturday. The other two podcasts will feature Katrina Stevenson, David Rovics, Manny Hunter, Deborah Torrance, Joe Solo, Paul Sheridan, George Collins, Laura Landell, Damavir Kaur, and Foud Alec Broff. But on this Monday pod, we have an international theme. We have Red Rafe talking about Germany, Brexit, and Burns. Nathalia Urban on Brazil and the impact of mining companies on indigenous communities. And George Collins, looking at right-wing nationalist movements around the world through an historical lens. And an update from Jagtar Singh Joe from Damanvir Kaur. Then, to finish off, we have our next episode in Tales of the Gaelic. All the episodes of Tales can be found on our website, which is, of course, leftungagged.org, with music from The Charlemagne's, Golo Rojo, Petrol Girls, and this track, Vagina Police, from The Dream Nails. Your body is on your own.
You miss me? That's right. It's me, Red Rafe, your pal and guide to what's going on in the People's Republic of Maastricht. Well, I've been up to a lot since the last time you heard from me, including taking a lovely winter trip to Germany to see you in the new year with my German pals. I can honestly say that I've not seen so many fireworks in my whole life. All the folk went out their houses at midnight and had wee parties in the street. I've never seen anything like it. And I must admit, I grate a wee bit, thinking about Brexit and a massive loss of opportunity for all the young folk that's losing the rights to live, work, study and love throughout all the countries of the EU. As I write this, Theresa May is still trying to force her deal through Parliament, and when you hear it, we'll know whether she succeeded or no. But I'm not taking any chances. I'm lucky enough to be eligible for Irish citizenship, and the next time I go to Germany, I'll have a brand new Irish passport to impress the customs officer with. And a wee fun fact for you. Because Germany's an hour ahead of us, it means I have gained an extra hour of 2019 by seeing in the new year there. So this year better be worth it, it being a wee bit longer for me. But closer to home, me, Kurt and wee Vinny had our own burden supper the other day. Me and wee Vinny wired into the traditional haggis, and Kurt, being a vegan, had just tatties and neeps. We all laughed at the hypocrisy of the unionist parties in Scotland sitting down together to celebrate the life of the bard. And in their honour, I wrote a wee poem. It's called Ode to a Toadie. And here it is. Burns, you dinna care for union. Toast it by Westminster minion. Happy to your doom he'd drag us. That wee Tory, eating haggis. Well, I hope you like that, folks. And I know it's late, but Happy New Year. See you next time. I mean, what can go wrong?
My name is Natalia. I'm a Brazilian activist, and I'm gonna talk a bit about the tragedy in Brumadinho, Minas Gerais. The dam ruptured on the last Friday, sending a wave of iron ore waste and mud down the hill, destroying everything in its path, including residential areas, at least two smaller hotels, and a large administrative area of mining giant Vale. Until now, the death toll is around 100, and there are still lots of people missing, but the chance of finding survivors at this point is nearly impossible. But what I like to talk to you about is the indigenous community that was affected by the tragedy, the Naoxohan. It's a reclaimed area that has 25 families. They are about more or less 150 people. And they are indigenous from several ethnicities. We have Pataxós, we have Machacali. And what can I say about them is that the government took his sweet time to send them a proper help. I'm in direct contact with an indigenous activist from the tribe, and she was telling me that even though several Brazilians were sending donations of food and water, they were not receiving anything, and they pretty much lived by the river. Their habits are fishing and they grow their own food. So they are now not being able to fish because all the fishes are dying and the water that is also contaminated. And so they also lost their plantations. What can I say is that Bolsonaro's government will be terrible for the indigenous, especially because the person that is in charge of the indigenous foundation is a general that before working for the Brazilian government was working as a lobbyist for the Canadian mining company Belo Sun. And they are pressing the current government to be able to explore inside indigenous territories. They want, and if they do that, they will literally kill the population there. Because when it comes to mining, it's not just the mining land that is affected. The waters, the water supplies are affected, the fauna, the flora, everything. So for the indigenous is a very complicated matter to intrude inside their lands, not because the people have the weird notion that they are savages or that they are inhospitable, but they actually they are only protective because it's their way of life. Their land is not just a land, it's not just the place where they live. Is part of them, is part of their culture, is part of who their identity. So it's very important that an international community starts to raise awareness about the indigenous situation in Brazil. According to reports from the United Nations, the Brazilian indigenous are the ones that are currently under more possibility of being exterminated by Bolsonaro's government, especially because during his campaign, he was always very hostile towards not just indigenous, but all traditional communities in Brazil. What Bolsonaro's pretends to do when it comes to indigenous is to remove the most of portions of land that he can and to sell that land to private companies and to explore those lands in a predatory way. So the indigenous are feeling very hopeless. They are scared. And what can I say about Brumadinho is taking as the example of the Krenak that were affected by the last mining tragedy in 2015 when the dam also ruptured in Mariana, is that the Krenaks now they still live in the contaminated land. And they are not able anymore to fishing, to grow their own food. So the government gives them very little money and they have to go to supermarkets to buy their own food, which is for them very problematic, especially because many of those small cities that are near the affected area and usual in near the indigenous communities, they are very hostile towards indigenous. So what I think that can be done right now is to you is to prepare for a plan of recovering of that land. How can this? How can the land being be fully recovered? Ways of making the soil productive again. Ways of making the river to be decontaminated, and also to raise awareness about the fact that more accidents like that can happen, not just around indigenous communities, but around other areas, which even unpopulated areas, but with a very rich environment. So I think that we all should be watching over Brazil right now and not being complacent over what Bolsonaro is planning to do with our environment. Because it's not just a Brazilian issue, I think it's a global issue right now to protect the rainforest, to protect our forests, our environment, and to keep everything preserved as best we can.
Nacerán con el puño levantado. Nuestros hijos nacerán con el puño levantado. Y esta tierra que no es mía, y esta tierra que es del amor. Y esta tierra que no es mía, y esta tierra que es del amor. La riego con mi sudor, la trabajo con mis manos. La riego con mi sudor, la trabajo con mis manos. Pero dime, compañero, si estas tierras son del amor. Pero dime, compañero, si estas tierras son del amor. Porque nunca lo hemos visto trabajando en el arao. Porque nunca lo hemos visto nacerán con el puño levantado.
Hello, you good folks out there. George Collins here for another episode of Ungagged, and I hope you're doing well wherever it is in the world you happen to be listening at this point. I apologize in advance, there's some construction going on around my house, so if you hear noise in the background, don't worry, it's not a war going on, it's just some home improvement, I guess that's the word for it. In the last 2 or 3 years, us on the left have often asked the question of how we arrived to this point, when all of these demagogues seem to be rising around the world, whether it be Donald Trump, the Brexit movement in the UK, Viktor Orban, Rodrigo Duterte. A few months ago, we could add Jair Bolsonaro to that list down in Brazil. It's a question that I've explored on this program before, and you might be sick of hearing me talk about it at this point. But not long ago, I read a book that opened my eyes to the root causes of what we're seeing. And not only was it explained in such brilliant and clear terms, but it was also a fantastic history lesson on the precedents that has been set for these kinds of movements before, and how what we're experiencing is in fact not new. It's part of a larger cycle of what we think of as a global capitalist system of quote-unquote modernization. This book is Age of Anger by author Pankaj Mishra. Excuse me, I butchered that. He is a Indian essayist and novelist living in London who is also a member of one of the Royal Societies, of which I'm afraid I can't recall at this juncture. But The Age of Anger deconstructs exactly that, this age of anger that we are living in a world that, as he explains it, quote, is encouraged with suspicion, potentially lethal among the hundreds of millions of people condemned to superfluousness, that the present order, democratic or authoritarian, is built upon force and fraud. They incite a broader and more apocalyptic mood than we have witnessed before. They also underscore the need for some truly transformative thinking about both the self and the world. Unquote. Now, at a glance, transformative thinking may not be an inherently bad thing. I think many of us on the left believe that a form of transformative thinking is necessary to escape the global capitalist order and the cycle that it perpetuates. The problem is when this becomes distorted by right-wing demagogues, or I hate using the word right-wing populist because that in and of itself is an oxymoron, but seems to have been some kind of freak that's been spawned these days. These types of people, these movements, can exploit this need for transformative thinking and direct it towards society's most vulnerable, usually in the interests of perpetuating these vapid ideas of self-interest, of materialism, that the way to improve oneself is to be in reckless pursuit of your own interests, and when everybody does that, surely society will benefit. It is the first half of Adam Smith's core philosophy when he wrote in The Wealth of Nations these exact terms, the importance of individual liberty and individual wealth accumulation to benefit society. And of course, this is a mantra that we hear all the time, but it can go all the way back to the Enlightenment period, back in the 18th and 19th centuries with thinkers like Voltaire and Rousseau and the rest of them. This movement starting in France creates many of these principles that we now recognize of radical individualism, the pursuit of wealth above all else, and a loss of community, of caring, of social connections. This was being birthed in France and to a lesser extent Britain. Next door, you have the country of Germany, which at the time was believed to be backwards. It was split into many of these different kingdoms ruled by these princes, and its people had no culture, they had no history. And the scholar Max Weber understood this when, as a nationalist, observing the advance of this impersonal bureaucracy in his industrializing nation, reached his despairing diagnosis of the modern world as an iron cage, if you will, from which only a charismatic leader could offer escape. What did this become exactly? When you have a people in the Germans who are constantly being told that they are worthless, that their culture, their society is corrupt, it's bankrupt of all moral maturity, of any culture, anything worth having, and that the solution is to, in essence, become French and adopt these quote, modern ideals, because why wouldn't you, right? As it was felt, how could you be so opposed to modernity and all these modern goods it has to offer with equality, liberty, prosperity, and all of these different kinds of things? Eventually, that's not going to sit very well if you subject people to it long enough. And so we saw the rise of German ultranationalism to start. Wagner was a great composer, but he was also known for his immense German fervor, if you will. Wouldn't take very many years for that to morph into xenophobia, an inherent skepticism of anything French or outside, because it was perceived that it would be an attack on anything German. And, well, we know where this story is going to go by the time we reach the mid-20th century, where xenophobia has morphed into full-on rage and a deconstruction of any kind of democratic order, paired with rampant anti-Semitism, anti-Romani sentiment, and all these other things. We often look at something like World War II, the rise of Nazi Germany, as this isolated box, an anomaly, right? The redheaded stepchild of the otherwise glorious European family. Nothing like this could ever happen. What we tend to forget is that these are inevitable happenings of modernity. You know, modernity for Europe and for the Americas too was not a stainless process. It was bloody. There was all kinds of conflict. We take for granted how recent the idea of European unity even is. And of course, over here in my neck of the woods in the United States, where capitalism arrived together with imperialism, depriving all of the indigenous nations with any opportunity to explore an alternative path. And when we look around the world at places where right-wing demagogues have arisen, this is a pattern that we will see in their history. Take India, for example, with the rise of Prime Minister Narendra Modi, the poster child, spit an image on the marquee of Hindu ultranationalism. Hindutva, as it's called, is running all over the place in India. We see violence against Muslims, against women, against anyone who's not perceived to be part of the Hindu order. But you look precipitating this, and what do we have? A country that, after independence, was still economically tied to the British Commonwealth. It had no choice but to depend on it. It's been told for over 70 years that it has to catch up with the West and fit centuries worth of progress into mere decades. And by the time they arrive at any one of those milestones, well, 10 more have popped up on the horizon. Better get moving. And for what exactly? If you are an Indian citizen, what are you being told? That any other trajectory your nation would take is bad, it's corrupt, it's anti-modern, and therefore your solution is not to be Indian, but to be European. Well, about 20 years ago, starting, we would see coming out of India much literature, much film that would celebrate Indianness in a very aggressive way. It would talk about Hindus as a beloved people, as a creative people. And on the surface, there is absolutely zero wrong with that. But left unchecked and fueled by this rage and this bitterness of being told for years that they were backwards, something like the rise of the BJP, which is Modi's party, and the Hindu ultranationalism that we've seen come and go in waves in India over the years, you can see it coming a mile away. Of course, doesn't excuse it. You know, it's an explanation, not an excuse. The thing that drives me crazy when reading through Mishra and thinking about the example of India is that the Swedish economist Gunnar Myrdal predicted this decades ago. In his work Asian Drama, which was published in 3 volumes, I've only read the first volume at this point because it's very dense economic reading, but published all the way back in 1968, he inquired into the poverty of the nations of South and Southeast Asia, basically these former British, French, and Dutch colonies. And even then, even in 1968, Gunnar Myrdal recognized that you could not take a nation like India, where 80% or so of its economy was based on cottage industry, and just force it through this square hole as a round peg into a heavy industry nation in a matter of a decade. It was impossible. From an economic, a political standpoint, take any European country and they wouldn't be able to do that. 1968, this dude figured out all the dangers, the political and otherwise, that could come with trying to force these countries to be European when their environments, their people, their history was just not made for it. And it's reflected exactly in Pankaj Mishra's analysis in The Age of Anger. Another quote for you. Quote, "Post-colonial nation-building was an extraordinary project. Hundreds of millions of people persuaded to renounce and often scorn a world of the past that had endured for thousands of years and to undertake a gamble of creating modern citizens who would be secular, enlightened, cultured, and heroic," unquote. This is how we can explain the rise of Trump, of Modi, of any of these places that feel so disconnected. Because we've deprived people in pursuing these rabid capitalist interests. We've deprived them of their sense of community, their sense of purpose, any sort of spiritual connection they would have to an other. And not necessarily spiritual in a religious sense, but like what the Chinese philosopher Confucius talked about, that if you don't give people some kind of duty, if it's not to God, perhaps it could be to their family, to their political situation, to their community, that without that sense they would lose their way and become these shells of humanity as Confucius described them. And what we now see are the political consequences of that played out on a global scale. I used to think that globalization, the attainment of some kind of global unity, was a pipe dream. That every libertarian's worst fear of a world government was that, just a boogeyman that hides in your closet, much like the Babadook. But in recent months, I've come to think that we actually could reach that point as humanity. But we aren't going to do it through the pursuit of profit-driven self-interest in the way that we have attempted so many times before. The world's global financial and governing institutions, dominated by European and American thought, tell all of these other nations that there is but one way to modernize, and if they don't choose to take it, we will force them to do so. We do ourselves a great disservice by not exploring and spreading the ideas of socialism, especially those hinged on caring for others. And in doing so, we have to begin to tell ourselves that this one path to modernity and development, which even the Marxists use, it's not the only way. Should we allow nations to develop the way that they could have if they were not assaulted with the 1-2 punch of capitalism and imperialism, we could start to see something of a global unity. And I hope that as we continue to explore those ideas, we can move closer to that reality.
Don't treat me like I'm fragile. Scottish activist Jagtar Singh Joho, Jaggi, remains detained in India. Having been abducted in early November 2017, his incarceration drags on, with the Indian judicial system purposely delaying hearings and keeping Jaggi in an unjust cycle of confinement. While his legal team has repeatedly stressed throughout the duration of his detention that the Indian authorities have not presented any evidence and that Jaggi should be released immediately, the legal system and the Indian media continue to demonize him and state his guilt, even though there have been no clear charges or even a trial, lacking any semblance of due process of law. 14 months ago, a petition was filed so that Jaggi could receive an independent medical exam to assess the torture he endured during the first few days of his detainment. Till present day, Jaggi has never been allowed to have this examination. Awareness and constant pressure on the UK government to intervene is needed to secure his release. Please contact your Member of Parliament via letter, email, or phone every day to remind them of Jaggi's detention and to inquire what they're doing for his release. Please also contact Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt and implore him to meet with Jaggi's family and move this case forward. Template letters can be found on the Free Jaggi Now social media pages. For all of the latest updates and to help raise awareness on social media, please like, follow, and share the hashtag Free Jaggi Now campaign. That's FREEJAGGINOW campaign on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
A few quid keeps us going. Donate at paypal.me/ungagged left. Tales of the Gearlock by Acting Strange Theatre Company. This is the podcast from The Courier, brought to you by Angus Quinley.
Welcome to the Gearlock Courier podcast. The headlines today. Has MP Tristan Bohr absconded with £20 million? We speak to the Faslane-based Commodore. Peace protesters focusing on Faslane from across the world. British government asks Scotland to help bolster security around the base. And a new Peterhead to Stavanger and Norway Bridge. What would you call it? We take your suggestions in our Twitter poll. Remember to use the hashtag NordBridge. And the Commodore sings more than that in a minute. We begin with the story of the former MP Tristan Bohr, who, it seems to have disappeared with a purported £20 million. Let me remind you of the extraordinary recording that I made at the meeting at Frackleton's Bar a week ago.
The British government are offering millions to the local community to be spent on whatever the community decides. New schools, new play parks, a new marina.
How many millions?
20 million for this village. Think about how that could be spent.
And as your ex-MP, I have been given the power to okay the payment. I'm holding the money in an account as we speak.
Commodore, welcome to the Courier studio.
Thank you, Angus.
Commodore, you mentioned in that meeting that the UK government had offered £20 million for the village. Would you care to comment on that offer and on where you think the money is now?
Angus, you know that the recording you made was during a night of celebration. Some of us had a few drinks and claims were made in the excitement following an invasion by the peace camp anarchists. I apologise for giving the impression that...
So are you saying that the UK government is not offering any money to the community in order to get them to pressurise the Scottish government to retrain the WMD in Faslane?
Angus, I'm not here representing the UK government. I'm here to reassure local people that their jobs are safe at the base for this foreseeable future and that the local economy is under attack from Edinburgh.
So, are you not aware of any money handed over to Tristan Blair and that you are unaware of the UK government requesting the intervention of Interpol into the investigation?
I'm not here to represent the UK government. I'm here to reassure.
Thank you, Commodore. And more from the Commodore, who has been dubbed the UK sub-commander by local punks in just a while.
20 rolls of gaffer tape between the both of you. That cost me a fortune, I can tell you. Now, you, make sure you don't roll off the plastic sheet. When I take the tape off, you'll talk on the phone. You know what to say to her. You'll talk calmly to her. Okay? Just nod. Good. Hey, I told you not to stray from the path. Beware the moon. Stay clear of Jack's house. You see, I can't let you harm anyone in the village, much less the new people. We need them. We need that young lassie to help us get rid of the likes of that lying Commodore and her missiles. No one has been allowed to harm the village while I've been around. Bloody cellar is full. And as for this old bastard. This old bastard used to come here begging for our votes, and then he went down to London and took our heating money. Fooled me for a while. Until minus 20. And this bastard killed her. Now, Mr. Slaughtered Lamb, lie down. That's it. I'll set the phone by your mouth. Is it cold? Well, it has been in my shed for years. Cleaned it up last night. It's sharp. Sharpened it on the oilstone last night. One wrong word and this hammer will drive it through your temple. All right, Slaughtered Lamb. That's what the plastic sheeting is for. I don't want your blood all over our carpet. Okay, let me get the tape from your mouth.
You're mad. Mad old bastard. Hey, let me...
Do you feel that? A wee bit of pressure?
Fuck.
Yes, I told you it was sharp. One light tap and it'll be through the side of your head. A bigger tap and it's goodnight, Vienna. Now, Slaughtered Lamb, is everything calm?
Okay, everything's cool.
Okay, I'll dial.
I'm in a B&B in Rue.
Did you take him up?
I've got him. He's stashed. I covered him over lightly again with soil and ferns. I need a hand to move him.
Jesus, you want me to help?
Aye, he's too heavy. I did my back in digging. I can hardly move. He was never a small man. He was well preserved in the peat.
Look, I'm not going up there too.
I'll just have to fill the hole in again. I can't get him out on my own.
Tell her you have to put her on hold. Pretend there's someone at the door.
There's someone at the door. Ask for an extra pillow. Just give us a sec.
You old bastard! Shut the fuck up! You fucking murdering Tory scum! If you make one more fucking noise, the chisel will go through your fucking head! Are we calm? Okay.
Hello? I stay indoors all day.
Look, I can't get there tonight. I'll drive up. I don't want to stay.
Okay. I'll meet you outside the local pub, Frackleton's. At 10:30?
Okay, thank God all this will soon be over.
Okay. I'll see you there. Bye.
Well done.
Why do you want to meet her?
Well, Slaughtered Lamb, that's nothing for you to worry about. Say your prayers. Here, let me get the tape. Try not to bleed in our carpet.
This is the podcast from The Courier, brought to you by Angus Quinley.
The courier has made inquiries into the estate of Tristan Boer, his holding company. Boer Enterprises has just this week filed for bankruptcy and has been ordered to appear in the High Court in Glasgow over outstanding debts. Boer has not been seen since leaving Frackleton's bar on a night of the meeting of the group Friends of WMD. A police search of the surrounding area for the ex-MP has been called off, but the discovery of a tent on the hills has prompted a search for a man who is believed to have been seen in the area a fortnight ago. More on that later. In other news, 72 people have been arrested during a demonstration outside Faslane Base. The peace camp had refused to ask approximately 350 new campers who have set up on the neighbouring grass verge along the A814 to pack up and go. Peace organisations from around the world have condemned the UK refusal to negotiate openly with the new Scottish Government, and the organisations have pledged they will send representations to help the ongoing blockade of the base, which will culminate in a day of action that will be designed, say sources, to begin the dismantling of the perimeter fence. Estimates are that there could be as many as 50,000 people convening in the Gaerloch in the coming days. Commodore, back to you. In light of what is happening, and as we know, you're a fantastic singer, have you a song for us on this occasion?
Yes, Angus. As you mentioned my new nickname earlier, this is an old UK sub song, Warhead.
So you have the entire play tattooed on you?
This is my favourite part of my face, the Mark Antony speech. But for our man, how can we be manipulated by politicians?
Aye, there's been a fair bit of that going on here for years.
Tattooed all over your body? Why would you do that?
Statement, man. Something for the historians to dig up from the peat bog. We weren't easily fooled, you know. Shakespeare taught us how they deceive us.
Aye, they Tories tried to deceive us for years, didn't they, Eddie? That blower, whatever he may be, the biggest liar since Billy.
Oh, I don't know, Jack.
But the revolution in Scotland is still going on, yes?
Well, with you bunch of tattooed Che Guevara's here, I suppose you could say it is.
Well, when you think about it, we're here to finish off what the yes vote started. Most of the people of Scotland want these things taken away, And yet, years after we're voted for that, they're still here.
I don't know. I mean, that Commodore, she says that the things in there bring jobs. They bring money and peace.
Read my neck. Look, see that bit.
Hold on. Let me see. You all did love him once, not without cause. What cause withhold you then to mourn for him? I don't get it.
You fair murdered that. You're no brand already. It's when Mark Antony turns the crowd, the part in the speech he manages to manipulate to seeing Brutus and Caesar with different eyes. Your Commodore is trying to manipulate you.
Mind you, Brando was better than the Godfather. All that, their honourable men stuff, didn't suit him. He was better at the... But I'm a superstitious man, and if some unlucky accident should befall him, if he should get shot in the head by a police officer, or if he should hang himself in his jail cell, or if he's struck by a bolt of lightning, then I'm going to blame some of the people in this room, and that I do not forgive. But that aside, let me say that I swear on the souls of my grandchildren that I will not be the one to break the peace we made here today.
Profound, man. If I had some more space, that would be on my skin.
I didn't know Mark Antony was American, Jack.
Hey, no, pal. That's for The Godfather, the best film ever made. That and Convoy. We've got a great big convoy trucking all through the night.
This place is cool. Do you guys eat rooms? I mean, this village is radical, man.
Ha, no, pal. Anyway, what can I be getting for you?
Oh, yes. Do you have any soya milk?
Chris Christofferson would have made a great Mark Antony.
Just come in today, at the back, beside the UHT.
Thanks, man.
You could laugh at some of the people in the village, Eddie.
What do you mean, Jack?
I mean, all these people who turned up to Blower's meeting. The ones who go on about these people stopping trade in the village. You know what I mean?
Well, I was one of them. I just don't see why the village should suffer when those hippies decide to blockade.
Now, Eddie, since I have been standing here talking to you, how much have you made from these hippies in the past 40 minutes?
I hate fucking hippies. Bloody middle-class cyber warriors with a long hair and "we shall overcome" crap. "Kick over the statues" is my motto.
Aye, and they're dirty.
I don't see you refusing to take any of their money.
There are hippies here. I haven't met any yet.
Well, those two that bought the tofu and okra just before you, but that lot.
Who? Apple and Chris Eder? No, man. They are Bantu warriors. Those two are part of the First Wave, man.
Bantu warriors? What do you mean?
That's what they do at night. They play an MMORPG. That's where I met them.
Is that some kind of card game, like?
It's an online game. They are Bantu warriors by night. Apple is a teacher by day, and Crusader has an iron business. I just know them as Bantu warriors.
It makes no difference to me what a man does for a living. Understand? That Don Corleone knew what he was on about.
That'll be £12.50, son.
Oh, do you have lighter fuel? I mean the canisters.
Aye, here.
How many have you got behind there?
4, 7, 9, 14. I've got 14, why?
I'll have a lot.
All of them? That's some smoking habit, pal.
I don't smoke. Oh yes? Aye, I mean of course I'm buying them for my friends.
I hope you aren't going to use them for no good.
Not to hurt anyone, no. Just their sisters and pulling down the wire. We've made a few homemade blow torches.
Eddie, now, are you going to serve the hip? This guy, or no?
I don't care what you're using them for, pal. But don't let on you got them here.
Pity you don't have any more. I mean, we made 50 blow torches.
I can put an order in. But you're going to have to tell your pals to let the supply lorry through again early in the morning.
Take their money, Eddie. Good man.
I'll do that. I'll be here to get them early, okay? Could you make sure you keep them for me? My name is Furdo.
Is that your Bantu name, pal?
Nope. My parents were hippies. They thought it was cool. I was conceived when I went on a trip of bastards. When I was a little guy, it was a song by Johnny Cash, a boy named Sue. If my dad hadn't gone into the monastery, I would have bitten off a piece of his ear.
Ah, PC Michael, what can I be doing you for?
Eddie, Jack, further.
Anyway, nice talking to you guys. See you tomorrow.
What are you lot planning further? No violence, I hope.
Now, PC Michael, you know we are peace-loving hippies.
And I looked at him and my blood ran cold. And I said, my name is Sue. How do you do? Now you're gonna die.
Are you okay, Jack?
For fuck's sake, I've had the Godfather and Chris Christopherson, and now we're getting Johnny Cash. Bite the mimic, as our Jack.
It's been real, guys. I gotta go. I'm on the latrine duty today.
Okay, Father, be good.
Nice meeting you, son. You're doing good stuff out there. And if anyone gets in your way, I'll wrong the honourable men whose daggers have stabbed Caesar.
Nice one, Jack.
Packet of cheese and onion and one of the wee packets of sushi for the chief, Eddie.
Certainly. That'll be $5.99. You okay, Constable? You look harassed.
Have you seen outside, Eddie? There are thousands of them. We aren't even getting reinforcements until Thursday.
Why's that?
Too new, me. I think the government have had enough of that base and the UK government faffing about, wanting to go. They're allowing the campaigners to do what they will in the next few days so they can say in negotiations we can't guarantee your safety. But that's my cynical mind.
Aye, makes sense. Any word of that old bugger blower?
No, not yet. Completely disappeared. No one has seen him since he staggered out of the pub. Jack here was the last one to speak to him.
Aye, he was fair unsteady on his feet, PC Michael. Staggered up the road towards Rue. Said something about a taxi.
Well, no taxi for him this side of the Clyde did pick up near here at that time of night. It's a mystery.
I kidnapped him. I have him in my cellar. See this bottle of wine? Clarence, I hate this, his liver and some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Oh, for fuck's sake, it's bloody Mike Yarwood again.
Did you hear the Courier podcast?
Aye, Angus is great. How are you?
Okay, you?
It's been busy. It's just brilliant, all these people.
Well, I did say our work wasn't over.
I'm sorry, Caroline. Can we forget what I said? I want to stay with you.
Okay, look, we'll talk about it later. In the meantime, people have arrived from Holland. We need to find space for them.
Okay. Are we okay, though?
I suppose so. No, you can't pitch in there. It's MOD land. They'll arrest you. There's room on the verge about half a mile up the road. Maybe we could have a drink in Frackleton's. Oh, hold on. Yes? Oh, I'll send the minibus down to the station. How many? That'll be two runs. Okay, see you soon. Could you go collect a group of French anarchists from Helensburgh Station?
Aye, okay. See you later.
Yes, in Frackleton's, about 8:30.
Here, boy, eat up. Mr. Blower. You suck that brandy up through that straw. That's all you're getting. Stay drunk, dear boy, as you would say. Now, let's get this leg cut up. This boil made a bit of a mess of the grout in the fireplace. I thought I had it well covered with plastic. Ah, the woman.
Hi, Callum, are you there?
Aye.
Okay, well, I'm here, in Helensburgh. It's hard to get up to the village, all these new age anarchists or whatever they are. I can get there for about 9 this evening, is that okay?
Aye.
Are you okay? You don't sound okay.
I've got a cold.
Oh well, keep it to yourself. So I'll see you at 9 o'clock in the bar.
Aye. There you go, Mr. Blower. A lady friend for you soon. And that'll be all those loose ends tied up. Here, let me give you a top-up. That was an Acting Strange Theatre Company production. Caroline was played by Alex McKenzie. Further, Andy Neeson. Angus, Lindsay Webster. Callum, Jamie Boland. Eddie, Neil Scott. John, Curtis Randall. The Commodore, Pauline Bradley.
PC Miko, Lindsay Webster. Tristan Blower, Vincent Magritte. Daphne, Sandra Webster. Jack, Neil Anderson. Original music by Tut Vuvu.